This podcast is intended for investment professionals. Hello, and welcome back to Elchem Talks. Investing for the long term often means that all of us in the market look at how the world's changing and what opportunities those changes can present for our portfolios. But a question we're so often asked by allocators and advisors is, what's a genuine long-term investment trend and what's a flash-in-the-pan investment fad? Here to discuss and debate this fascinating issue are Head of ETFs Howie Lee and Head of Multi-Asset Funds John Rowe. Thanks to you both for joining us here today.
Thanks for inviting us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Now, before we start, I think we should really nail down the difference between the two, fad versus trend. If I've understood this right, I think we can understand an investment trend to be a shift that's really quite permanent, one that affects an economy or politics and strengthens until it's basically part of the furniture. And on the opposite side, a fad would capture mainstream imagination, but is forgotten fairly quickly again. So it has the power to move asset prices, maybe, but not so much the general direction the world is moving anyway. John, would you say that broadly fits in with your investment experience?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it can be semi-permanent, so it feels permanent. So, for example, you could have a rise in populism in politics, which then eventually dissipates. But that could be a decade or two-decade process. And so from that perspective, when you're in it, it feels permanent and it goes over a number of years. I mean, fads can last a couple of years. So if you go back to the first financial bubble, so tulip mania, that lasted around 3 years from beginning to end. But, you know, there was no real fundamental value in tulips. It was just a fad.
A fad, that's kind of your any good examples there, Howie, from a fad perspective that fits in with this kind of general definition?
Yeah, and I think I agree with those points there. I think the best way to look at it from an investor's point of view, fad type investments are probably more tactical opportunities in the short term, whereas what long-term trends are trying to target are strategic investments where there is a vision as to where the world's going to end up in the future. So there's a structural shift there. So think of that as a long-term strategic investment rather than a short-term one.
So that's a great example. So if you take more recently the China Star Board, so this kind of tech-focused universe that they've launched, one stock over 500% on the first day, average increase 140%. As Howie says, that's kind of a tactical, if you guess that was going to happen, you can make money on it. Kind of technology and global technology and Chinese technology is a trend.
Yeah, no doubt.
But this kind of current index and its beginning and it going a bit crazy, that's just a short term, maybe make money out of it, maybe you don't.
So I guess perhaps there's an element of certainty to be there, that the long-term trend of, you know, technology changing the world that we live in, absolutely, that looks like a certainty, no doubt about it. But the short-term uncertainty of the Chinese particular index, perhaps less so.
Yeah, I think it's really difficult to say, well, who's going to be the winners and who's going to survive this kind of long-term trend. The most important thing to think about is, you know, if you're an investor, to consider, all right, let's say regardless of the economic conditions, is there an underlying driver for demand for this? Because there's a structural change, technology, or it might be how we consume energy and resources, or there's it might be a demographic shift that's causing this investment area to make sense. And I think we really need to understand the foundations of the change rather than the kind of flash in the pan, what's being picked up in, say, the general media.
Sometimes it helps pick up on that media point. Sometimes it helps take non-investment examples. So take Pokemon Go, right? A billion people apparently played it. With the greatest respect to Nintendo, I don't think it's going to be around in 20 years. It's a fad. It's a temporary, exciting thing that gets a lot of, captures the imagination, captures the media's imagination. The same with the game Fortnite, 150 million plus users. But in a decade or two, I won't still be playing it. So from that perspective, it fits into that fad box with the media attention.
Do people still play Candy Crush?
I'm sure they do, and I'm sure it's played by their millions. As you say, remember that last year when there were such like these fear articles about is Fortnite changing your child's mind? Yeah. A real kind of fad behind that. And so if we don't take that back to the trend example of what perhaps is changing, and maybe that is the move to, like you talked about demographics. What can you tell me that's changing in demographics that is so fundamental and presents such an investment opportunity that is without a doubt an investment trend?
Yeah, perhaps I'll throw a few points out here. And, you know, John's expertise in asset allocation could probably expand on this a lot more. But if you kind of consider the fact that, you know, there's an aging population, if you also consider the fact that globally there are emerging markets which are becoming more and more developed, and that kind of time frame is actually a lot faster than what it was previously because technology is capable of essentially leapfrogging some of the processes that traditional economies had to go through. So you kind of look at that. You also look at the power of the kind of shift of economic center or economic dominance from, let's say, west to east or different directions. You kind of pay attention to those and you realize those are actually drivers for certain businesses, for certain sectors. But in many cases, it also drives demand and supply as well. John, I'm sure you've got definitely have thoughts on this in your kind of long-term
demand
allocation.
Demand and supply drivers. John, how does that work into an asset allocator's point of view?
There's a few different areas. So it can help explain current asset pricing. It can help explain the demand for bonds. An aging population wants safer assets, so on and so forth. It also explains why, you know, one of the big drivers that's seen for asset management is Asian growth. But it also then brings you on to the potential for conflict. So if you take a situation where the US has been the largest economy in the world, China's catching up and will overtake it, and you get into this kind of power struggle between an existing and a future power. And we're starting to see that, obviously, mm-hmm. with the trade tariffs and elsewhere. So these demographic shifts can have both positives in terms of innovation and evolving economies, but can also create risks like the butting up of a once great nation against a kind of upstart mm-hmm. Newcomer.
Perhaps we can take this bit more back to the micro and talk about perhaps changing their behavior over the long term. And I'm thinking here perhaps about the move to online shopping, e-commerce, and how you mentioned there, Howie, about it's not only changing specific businesses, but specific sectors and across sectors, both, as you said, John, opportunities perhaps for logistics, but actually downsides for the classic retail sector.
Yeah, that's a great area to look at because e-commerce is what, you know, people get it and people can see it happening. Mm-hmm. And a lot of questions that we used to get are, you know, well, how do you invest in e-commerce? And it's very tempting to continue to focus on, let's say, consumer discretionary companies, look at what companies are selling goods or mm-hmm. big brand names. But, you know, as we know, with all kind of good companies or shops that sell wares and goods, they might have a hot moment. They might have a not so hot moment. What we're actually trying to focus on there is actually what is the underlying shift that's actually happening? Mm-hmm. Okay, you've got people who are going into shops less, buying things on their smartphone and their laptops more. They also want goods to be delivered to their home the next day rather than goods being shipped to a shop once a week, once a month. That really changes the logistics dynamics and the structure of that industry. So e-commerce, the biggest kind of distraction or disruptor that's contributed to is very much in the logistics market. Mm. And a lot of that now needs to be automated. Warehousing needs to be a lot more efficient. Fulfillment is a big growing business. And that's why you even see in the real estate space, lots of logistic warehouses being built and being used by logistics companies.
Absolutely. So I wonder whether the question of the quality of available investment opportunities, you just mentioned there being asked about how do you invest in it. And I think it really comes into like what is available. I mean, take an investable trend such as the digitization of finance through blockchain technology, but there's only a limited supply of high quality purchase options. Does that factor into our decision of what constitutes an investment fad versus an investment trend?
I don't think so. It influences what's an investable trend and what's an uninvestable trend. So you could spot something that's going to be a driver for the economy or politics, but where there is no way to isolate the factor, the winners, the losers, in a way that's sufficiently pure play or concentrated to make it attractive. So if, for example, there are very few pure plays in an area like blockchain, and actually the benefits might be dissipated amongst a wide range of industries and individual companies within those industries, then we might, as macro investors, so my team very much focus on the big things, the growth, inflation, productivity, we might say, okay, well, we know it's going to influence lots of stocks, but maybe we don't have we think amongst the other macro factors we look at, we don't feel it's one we can isolate enough to justify focusing on it. So that for us is a difference between it's very, very much a theme. Whether or not it's directly an investable theme for us as macro investors is a different question.
And it's probably a moment in time as well. I think John picks up on a very important point around purity. If you look at the number of companies or businesses that like to talk about the fact that they now have or they're investing in blockchain or looking at blockchain or artificial intelligence seems to be
I think artificial the buzzword. Intelligence is so everywhere.
You see that in financial statements. You see it in their kind of press releases. Just including that word seems to make businesses like better, stronger, and much more future looking. But when you're actually looking at it from an investment lens, you want to know, well, what's the revenue they're actually deriving from these businesses? What's the research and development spend that's actually going into investing into these businesses to position for the future? And to John's point, you know, a lot of these, in terms of purity, it's difficult to track. And I think it's also very important for investors that invest in traditional investment funds, be it ETFs or unlisted funds, to consider the fact that this is a portfolio of publicly traded stocks. A lot of these innovative opportunities are actually coming from the private sector. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're certainly of the view that the vast majority of these blockchain opportunities, where the exciting stuff is happening, is actually in the private space. Some are startups, but some are larger companies which are still in the private sector.
And then if you want to isolate those, you've got to say, okay, but is even if you can isolate it, so you isolate the revenues, et cetera, you then got to look obviously at the valuations and what really understand what the future trends might do to valuations. So to give you a horror story, you could correctly identify that there was going to be a 10 times increase in solar consumption. But if you invested in a solar ETF, you might still have lost, in one case, around 90% total return. Because the problem was that the valuation in those companies and the winners and the losers turned out to not be what was expected, with a lot of the winners turning out to be in China and emerging markets, and the kind of developed market previous leaders ending up really struggling on margins. So that's that combination between isolating it and then valuing it.
There's probably a little bit of what people call the hype cycle as well, right? Mm-hmm. So around the time when people are really interested in it and all these investment monies flow in, valuations can look rich. I think people do still need to, or investors still need to pay attention to the fundamentals of the underlying companies, because at the end of the day, it's okay for price appreciation as long as it's backed up by some sort of other fundamental, such as, you know, rise in revenues and their sales growth that continues to grow. And as long as some of those metrics continue to demonstrate, you know, some of these new industries perhaps haven't found its baseline in terms of what's the average valuation for that market. The market's trying to find that. I think we kind of see something like that in the likes of Uber or even the likes of Beyond Meat. Here are some industries that have little peers in the public space. It's trying to find its kind of average valuation. But I think the important thing is to understand that there continues to be growth in sales as a very good measure. Mm-hmm.
I mean, the other big benefit is that if you take a whole universe and then you tilt towards those stocks that have certain characteristics, be it the revenues they generate or the growth they generate in area, you implicitly underweight those that are the exact opposite. And so one of the best ways of making money from the invention of the car was to bet against the horse. Now, to a degree, you didn't need to get the car maker right. You just needed to not be betting on the horse. So there's a degree of almost tilting away from the kind of definite losers can almost be enough to at least help you with the management of risk in the portfolio, because you've got less of that cliff risk that things completely fall off the edge, even if it turns out that the specific weights that you've gone with and everything on the positive side tends out to be a bit off, which will likely be. Mm-hmm. Innovative industries rarely proceed in a brilliantly linear way, but being underweight those losers can obviously help.
I think that takes us back really nicely to the definition of FAD that we had at the beginning, where it's about driving asset prices and really understanding kind of where the hype can really feed into mismatched expectations of what is an outsized winner or an outsized loser, perhaps. I mean, to take a very obvious recent example, as you looked at the massive price increase of Bitcoin. I mean, cryptocurrencies, to take us onto a potential investment trend or a potential investment FAD, you had this one currency that had broken through into public consciousness and yet saw a massive spike and a massive crash. What would be your both take on cryptocurrencies overall as a potential trend and that Bitcoin example?
So, of course, as we got the questions around Bitcoins, then we got questions on around other cryptocurrencies as well. Mm. And just looking from a regulatory perspective, when these questions were asked, one of the first things we looked at is this a currency or is this a commodity? And I think the answer to that is still unclear. You know, kind of our view on cryptocurrencies in general is generally, you know, currencies are a way for countries or jurisdictions to express their fiscal policy. Here is something that's completely decentralized. And cryptocurrencies, in a way, it's, you know, we can't say for certain which direction it's going to go. What is its future worth? What is its future value? So the purpose of it seems certainly like a trading vehicle. However, that being said, that's not to underplay the fact that there is a incentive or there's interest by the public to have some sort of digital revolution as it relates to managing money or investing. So it's certainly an area to watch. But until we get some certainty as to, you know, whether this is indeed a currency or a commodity, I think that's where we're going to get some more answers.
John, I imagine there's a lot of political risk around these sort of things as well.
Yeah, there is. I mean, in the case of Bitcoin, if it is a currency, it is a poorly functioning currency, because one of the clear definitions for a currency is a store of value. And when it's as volatile as it's been, it kind of fails that test. Mm-hmm. So as you say, that is one of the things that undermines it as a kind of future. I think, so the idea of digitization of the of finance, yes, that's definitely a theme. The current cryptocurrencies, to me, feel like a fad. And that's because I'm not convinced any of them will kind of exist in 5 or 10 years. The thing I always ask myself is, if there was no buyer tomorrow, am I still happy with what I bought? And for me, they would all fail on that basis. Whereas if I buy an AI company and all of a sudden nobody loves AI and I still think it's going to produce revenues, I can still be happy with what I bought. Whereas, and even with gold, right? Gold doesn't give you a dividend or whatever. But even if there's no buyer for gold, I can go, I believe there's a demand in the future. I understand where it comes from. Gold will still be gold in a decade. And it's there and it matters to my portfolio. Mm-hmm. So there is that aspect. On the cryptocurrency side, we're clearly seeing it come out with Libra. So Libra qualifies much better as a store of value because they're actually going to back the currency with physical assets. And in doing so, it becomes an effective store of value.
That's collateralized, isn't it, basically?
Yeah, exactly. And in doing so, it works as a store of value. And the idea is this is one way of reaching 1 billion unbanked people. But of course, inevitably, it's very, very much more quickly and much more vociferously caught the attention of regulators who are saying, hang on, we're going to lose control of money supply and money demand. And that's really important for controlling the economy. And this could be really, really bad. So that is where the regulator comes in. They could just ban it.
We should talk about regulators, because I actually think regulators can change a fad towards a trend and vice versa.
Give me an example. Can you think of one that has happened either direction, where it was a fad, became a theme due to regulatory intervention, or perhaps the other way around?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the thing that you read a lot about at the moment, now bearing in mind cannabis, is illegal in many countries. Even in the United States, where there is a kind of growing industry towards it, on a federal level, it's illegal. However, there are countries and states which where cannabis activity is indeed legal, especially for medicinal use. And regulators can essentially create an opportunity or shut one right down pretty much immediately. So there's an example that we're living through real time right now as a society. You know, is that a long-term trend? Or is it at the risk of being locked down by the regulators, and therefore your value at the end of it is actually kind of closed down, or actually ends back up into the black market?
Yeah, so cannabis is a fascinating one. I mean, there's one argument that says, yeah, this is just an issue of equalization. So why should alcohol be legal but cannabis isn't, or coffee legal and cannabis isn't? None of them are brilliant for your mental state in different ways, but all of them can be beneficial in other ways. So that, to me, is kind of the small issue. The bigger issue, as you say, is taking a part of the economy that you know exists and taxing it. In that case, it fits into the broader trend of the French tech tax, the US cannabis legalization is effectively a way of taxing it. Mm-hmm. And so it can be a beneficiary. To look at an example where it can have the opposite effect and where it can get shut down. So a slightly controversial concept, but we'll talk about it anyway. So pornography in the UK, they're introducing age checks for wholly pornography sites. Now, the idea is somehow they'll stop the porn industry and they'll stop teenagers looking at it. Whereas the brutal reality might be that it forces people onto the dark web, it leads to alternative sites, it increases the risk of viruses. So one industry dies, and actually a kind of a new risk to the economy is actually grown. It's a great example of where regulation can have unintended consequences and turn fad and theme in reverse.
And this might go for multi-years, right? And you've seen the tobacco industry, being kind of a light shone on it for many, many years. And of course, vaping is becoming much more popular. But
interesting, vaping, fad or theme, off the top of that, on the basis of that.
at this moment in time, my view on that is probably it is a long-term trend because I think the tobacco industry has been under pressure for some time to think of more healthy solutions for users of cigarettes and tobacco. Vaping is a stepping stone there. Now, clearly, there are things that are that we can discuss around health as it relates to vaping. But what that is a step in the right direction. There is regulatory focus on that. And that could help really expand the industry or could really slow it down.
Yeah. So for me, we as again, as a team, we tend to focus on the macro trends. So as Howie said, health and an increasing focus on health and the removal of unhealthy practices is a big part of where vaping has come from. Secondly, technology. You know, it's been made possible through innovation in technology. So that, those two big macro trends, for me, vaping is kind of evidence of those two macro trends. It leads to a micro change. You change this for that. Mm-hmm. And it has the macro impacts in those areas. I mean, it's worth saying that, you know, cigarettes has been conclusive evidence that they cause damage for over 50 years. People have been smoking for over 500 years. So if vaping replaces smoking, which seems increasingly likely, it's hard to see it not being sustained. So it, and then the other thing I'd mention is that then what happens to the incumbents? Because you say it could be the future of the tobacco industry. It's always really hard. So Kodak invented the first digital camera back in 1975, and yet, of course, ultimately it ate itself, it killed it. So it is that kind of, the other trend is that you have to think about how are the incumbents in industries going to cope with innovation.
Interesting. So I feel like we've touched on a number of fads and themes there, from cryptocurrencies to vaping. And I wanted to put a few other potential investment trends or fads, which we get asked about clients by, and I wanted to hear both your thoughts on. So I'd like to start with perhaps a more generic one, electric vehicles. Quite at first glance, a much more long-term trend. However, is there more to it than that?
I suppose I'd take a slightly more helicopter view compared to just electric vehicles.
Electric helicopter?
Not quite there yet. But electric vehicles, it is going that direction, right? So the way we consume energy and our quest for greener energy and energy storage is actually pointing us towards the direction of electric vehicles. Now, there will be a point, and it's going to take quite a number of years, to be fair. So it depends on your time frame or your time horizon between a fad versus a trend. But definitely, we're seeing an increase in usage of electric vehicles. The government regulations are helping that. And there will be that kind of hard switchover point. Perhaps not as obvious or dramatic as horse versus car, but that will happen. But the helicopter view from us is that this is just a snippet of how our society is responding for the need of kind of greener energy production and energy storage. So that's one, it contributes to one part of that. The macro landscape here is alternative energy and the storage of the energy and the efficient distribution of that energy. That is definitely the long-term lens where the opportunities are to be captured.
Energy technology in that sense. John, anything to add on electric vehicles?
Yeah, driven by two macro mega trends, so climate change and reduced pollution, which is, you know, we've seen lots of attempts to reduce pollution within petrol cars, one of the natural extensions of that. The really interesting is then how that comes in with the mega trend of technology. So if we go forward a decade, it's very likely that electric cars will be fundamentally cheaper than petrol cars. They are a better vehicle in that respect. But would the money necessary to drive down battery prices, etc., have come about were it not for concerns over these other two? So it's a wonderful example of where multiple themes can cross over. And that's what makes it so difficult from an investment perspective, because it's really only the combination of those that has actually made it possible. Will it be a theme? Yes, it takes about 15 years to turn over the existing cars in the world. And it'll take, say, 10 years for them to become commercially competitive on a like-for-like basis. So if you add those together, you're talking about kind of a 25 years until kind of the last petrol car gets removed.
Related, space technology is a theme, or presented as a theme by many places. Views on there's a wonderful ticker called UFO. What your thoughts on space technology?
Fad for rich people. This is a fad for rich people. But the really good news is that there is a theme the theme of technology, when lots of rich people take all their unused money and they spend it on innovation, you get wonderful benefits to greater society. Yeah. So the space race, for example, you can thank the space race for things like the water purifier, so we could turn urine back into water and people could drink it again. What a wonderful concept. Satellite TV only came about because of the satellites originally put up in the precursors for the space race. You could go on and on. Adjustable smoke alarms. Do you remember how they used to go off all the time? They made them better and better on adjusting them for the particle levels so that you don't get as many false alarms. There's so much innovation comes from any kind of competitive race, and that's why a kind of rich people go to the moon scenario could be really great for broader society. Much rather doing that with their money than stick it in the bank.
I think I'm going to have to side with Fad there as well. I can't see of just getting into space how that's going to essentially generate benefits directly to our economy. However, that race for technology, as John clearly highlighted there, that's where it's interesting. You know, hopefully some of the technology developed there can be byproducts for something else in the future.
Mm-hmm. As another ETF, demand for organic products, the demand for non-genetically modified produce or just organic everything.
So maybe two themes. Three. So demographics, really obvious. It's driven more by millennials than older people. I guess in some ways they have the most to gain. They have the least time left. So that's a good reason to care the most. Secondly, it's this health. Let's all think about that side. But thirdly, and perhaps more worryingly, disparity in society. Mm-hmm. Organic produce costs more. It's increasingly consumed by people from higher socio-demographic parts of the universe. That's really worrying because that helps and can help change life expectancy, which in and of itself is not brilliant when that's determined by personal wealth. So from that perspective, I worry about the non-democratic aspects of what we see in organic food.
Organic food for me is, it is a more expensive product, continues to be seen as a premium product. The underlying thing that a lot of people are trying to solve for right now is just making sure that there's enough food for the world. Food scarcity is probably a much bigger issue that needs to be corrected. At this moment in time, it doesn't seem like organic ways alone can solve that. Mm-hmm. That's why you're seeing so much happening in its food technology space, agricultural tech.
You mentioned Beyond Meat earlier as well as a prime example of this.
Yeah. Beyond Meat is one thing. I mean, was that driven for food scarcity purposes? I don't think that was. And again, I shouldn't comment on that because, you know, the owners of that business probably clearly have a vision. But it does point towards less reliance on traditional meats that people eat. It's commonly known, again, that cows do produce a lot of pollution and causes issues with climate change. And if we can have some effect in minimizing that, then clearly that's a step in the right direction. But I think Beyond Meat seems to capture not so much on the so-called organic revolution, but more on the vegan revolution, if anything.
The move away from more flexitarian, perhaps, diets that we've seen.
Yeah, I heard that word for the first time maybe a few months ago only, but yes.
Hopefully today is the last time I
hear. So we've got time for one more, fad or trend. And I'd like to take us back to something, back to the world of Fortnite, as we were talking about earlier, esports and digital entertainment. And there's a ETF with the ticker NERD here. What's your view on this trend or fad?
For me, it's a trend. It's permanent. This is one I have very high confidence is never going to reverse unless we get global regulations to outlaw it, which seems pretty unlikely. As people spend more and more of their time in the digital world, you're getting much higher spending on things like video games, similar content. And from that perspective, it's that. And secondly, that kind of stuff can actually give a lot of utility for a relatively small cost. So it's actually deflationary because you use quite a lot of your time on it on something that doesn't actually cost that much in money terms. And therefore, actually, that reduces your aggregate spending. You get a lot of utility, and that can actually be a deflationary force in terms of what people choose to spend.
Trend. Again, it's about that connected future, and it's amazing to see that industry change so much in the last 5 years. You know, you now have essentially professional management agencies to manage people that play games. And, you know, 10 years ago, you would have thought that's impossible. Can you have somebody that is professionally paid to play Fortnite and actually be part of an agency where you've got a team of people who professionally play games? But in itself, there's a whole industry there. There are sponsors from companies. There's audience reach, so that it helps the advertising industry. It's an amazing trend that actually crosses into many different sectors. So definitely a place to watch as well.
Perhaps the key identifier of investment themes I think we can all take away from this conversation is that of resilience, that these are trends that are changing the world around us and will only continue to do so. So, and only once we've identified that can we look at the quality of the investment opportunity. Would that be a fair description to sum up, gents?
Yes.
Resilience is good.
And I think that's a really nice note to end on. So thank you again, both of you, for being here today. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And thank you, Howie.
Thanks very much, guys.
You can find more of the team's latest insights and views on investment trends and fads on our website, www.elgym.com. Please do subscribe to Elgym Talks on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts, and maybe even leave us a 5-star rating while you're there. Special thanks to my producer, Shanaz, and the team here at Through the Eye, and see you again next week for more Elgym Talks. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcasts app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookouts for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. And to find more great content from Legal & General Investment Management, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.